Okay, good morning, everybody, and happy new year. Okay, we're going to get started with, in this class right now, the projector just went blank. Let's turn it back on. So this is Bio 231, Human Anatomy, General Human Anatomy. We're going to meet twice a week for an hour and a half in lecture, and then once a week in lab for 3 hours. And it's important that you attend all the lectures and all the labs from the beginning to the end. And you know what? That will make the class easier, actually, okay, if you spend that time in there. And we also hold open labs. And this class also is very nice because we have supplemental instruction. And I'll introduce the supplemental instruction leader to you in just a second. But I can tell that not everybody in this room is registered for the class, because there's people standing in the aisles. And so that's really the first thing that I want to attend to is to talk to people that want to add the class. So this is Bio 231, all right, Human Anatomy. So I don't know if everybody's in the right spot. Is anybody here for that class? Good, I'm in the right spot. All right. Okay, so the way that you find your way into this class, if you are not officially registered at the moment, is to find an open place in lab. And as you can see, we don't even have enough room in lecture to add everybody we would like to add. I would like to add all of you, because right now I can tell you're very enthusiastic, and for sure an instructor likes to have enthusiastic students in the class. But unfortunately, since we don't have enough seats and resources in lab, like microscopes and specimens and things like that, we have to limit enrollment, unfortunately. Okay. So how do you find your way into class? You have to go to a lab the very first minute that a lab begins. Like today, there was one at 7:30 in the morning. And all the classes are closed, right? But if there's a no-show, and there are some no-shows every once in a while, if there is a no-show, then the lab instructor will drop them from the class, because you have to be in class for the first week, right? Or an instructor will drop you here at Cypress College. And then they'll hold a lottery to replace the students that get dropped. Okay? So I can't give any ad codes and lecture here because I don't know if there's room for you in lab. All right? But if you get into lab, you're automatically going to get into lecture. All right? So that's how that works. So you have to look at the schedule of classes and to find out when the labs are meeting and go there. And I suppose it would be nice to introduce yourself to the lab instructor, but it's probably not necessary because there might be like 50 people that need to add that class. So there's no wait list. As of today, everybody has an equal chance of finding a spot in lab as long as there's a no-show in that particular lab that you need to add. Okay? So that's how we are going to add students to Bio 231 this semester. All right, so if you are registered, don't miss any classes. And make sure your registration is current. Pay all your library fines, parking tickets, registration fees right on time, because there's no way to get back into the class if you get dropped by the computer. Okay? So stay current with that. All right, so if you're not officially registered in the class, I guess I'll ask you to leave, because my boss always tells me only officially registered students can be in class. Okay, because I want people that are registered to have a place to sit. Yeah, you'll have opportunity to make up the material that you miss. Yeah. Okay, good luck finding a place in lab, okay? All right, so we'll let some students switch out. All right, so congratulations to everybody that is here and registered. And obviously you've paid your fees and all that kind of stuff. That's really nice, because WebStar is brutal when it comes to dropping students. So you just get dropped and then all of a sudden you're erased from the planet. It's very disconcerting. All right, so I want to say, I know some of you are just returning and you're happy to see some friends from before, but if you could keep it down just a little bit so I don't lose my voice, that would be really nice. Okay, I don't have a whistle. There's one thing that I do in class, and that is I record the lectures and I put them online so that you can listen to the lectures as many times as you want, and from any place in the world that you want. During spring break, I've had students go out to Australia, and then they, I won't tell you this, but they cut out early, all right, because it's a long trip, but they were able to listen to that lecture down in Australia. Not live, but they can stream it to you wherever. So that's handy. So I'm wearing a microphone right here, so don't say anything that you don't want me to hear. All right, and that means, unfortunately, I can't say anything that I don't want everybody in the world to hear either. So that kind of makes the class not so interesting sometimes. All right, but I think it's a good trade-off to have that backup. There's also a text file of a previous lecture that contains the same material, the same content, so that if you have a hearing deficit, you still have access to all of that information. So you can listen to it or you can read it either way by downloading the particular files. Okay. All right, so in the syllabus, there is a disclaimer that says that I will not record my lectures. Some people want to be very confidential as to whether they're taking a class or not being in a class, and they're concerned that if they ask a question, their voice might show up on the recorder, and then everybody in the world can hear their voice on the internet. So if that's a concern for you, you have to let me know in writing the first week of school, and I won't record the lectures and preserve everybody's anonymity in class, right? So that is real important, you know, protecting everybody's identity. That's going to be a bigger and bigger problem, I'm sure, as the years go on because of the internet, right? So if that's important for you, let me know, and I won't record the lectures. The other thing is, you can record the lectures if you get my permission, all right? But you need my permission. And there's something else that's very important. Never, ever take a picture or a video of somebody without written permission in a private setting. Like if you're in lab or if you're in lecture right here, this is not just being out on the sidewalk someplace. All right, so make sure you don't take pictures of anybody or videos of anybody anywhere unless you get their written permission, okay? All right, so today I'm not going to take attendance, but I'm going to pass around a sign-in sheet. So make sure you sign the sign-in sheet because then that's your receipt that you were in class. So if I drop you and you say, well, why did you drop me? And I say, well, you weren't in class. And you could say, well, how come I signed it right here on this piece of paper? All right, then that means that I've got to sign all the pieces of paper and get the dean's signature to get you back in the class. Right, that's not your fault. So make sure you sign in every time. Right, that is just your confirmation that you're in class. Okay. All right, so let's see. About this class right here, there's going to be some good study guides online. Most of the material on the class is online in a virtual classroom we call Blackboard, and I'll show you how to log on to Blackboard if you haven't done that already. I've made photocopies of all of the syllabus and the first lecture material, but they haven't shown up for me to pass out to you. That's one of the reasons why I sent everybody an email to print out some material for you to take notes on. I'll show you where to find that information. It might show up any second. I'm not really sure when that's going to show up. Okay. So I think in this class, you don't have any prerequisites in this class. But if you've taken Bio 60, I'm sure that will help you because you're a little bit familiar with some of the terminology. But for people that haven't taken Bio 160 and this is your first class, I do have homework assignments for you that you can do before the lecture to help you get oriented. So when I bring up new terminology in lecture, you've at least kind of seen it in the homework. I call that a pre-lecture homework assignment. So in this class, there are no prerequisites, so it's not supposed to be a really hard killer class, but guess what? You still have to apply yourself in here because there's a lot of information that you have to learn. So come to every lecture, go to every lab, do the pre-lecture reading assignment, work on the study guide. And if you do all that, then I think you could probably even have fun during the practicums and the tests, believe it or not. All right? So that's really what we want you to have in here is a lot of fun. And even listen to the lecture again. So to help you have fun when you're taking a test, all right, we're lucky to have an SI leader, which then she'll work collaborative learning techniques outside of lecture and outside of lab. Okay? And that's Kenya Fernandez. And here is the contact information, which I'll put online too eventually. So I want to turn the discussion over to Kenya, and she'll talk to you a little bit about supplemental instruction and how that can help you get through this class or even get a better grade. Actually, people that go to supplemental instruction always get a better grade.
That's that is a fact. And good morning, everyone. Some of you might know I'm a student here at Kaiser, so it's like you guys have a good job last semester. And I decided to be an SI leader because I admire what the SI leader of last semester was doing. So I'm just here to help you. Take advantage of it. It's free. So you can come, that's just a good one. I'm going to be there from 8 to 10. If you're not able to make it at 8, let me know. Send me an email. So I can be there longer. Because if nobody shows up during the first 15 minutes, I'm going to have to leave. So if you're not able to be there at 8, let me know so I can wait for you guys. If you have any questions? I'm a student currently, so I have classes, and I go to SI sessions on my classes.
Do we need you for that?
That's in the library. If you have any questions and you're not able to make it, you can email me. And if I'm able to help you via email, I can do it. The library in the first floor?
Yeah.
You can just ask where the SI session. Because they haven't assigned a room for us yet. So I can give you that information on Wednesday. And that's going to be, we're going to start doing that on Wednesday. So if you're able to come, start coming on Wednesday. Good luck. And have a good semester.
Okay, thank you, Kenya. All right, so like I said, I'm not going to take attendance in here, but I have a sign-in sheet. So you got to sign your sign-in sheet by your name, okay? I don't have any other information on there, just your name. If you're not registered for the class, don't sign somebody else's name. Just put your name on the back, okay? Yeah, so
the first thing I wanted to say is that this is a difficult class. So it's good if you take advantage of this and be aware that you're going to have to spend a lot of time studying.
Okay, so here goes the sign-in sheet. If you don't find your name, if you don't find your name in here, I downloaded this from WebStar this morning. All right, so then I would be concerned if you're registered or not. This is the most current updated list. So if you even registered yesterday, I think you should be on this list, okay. And so I'll just pass it around, and hopefully you can find your name up there. All right, so let's take a look at the syllabus real quick. Okay, this is, and I'll show you where to find this online, but like I said, I might get copies for everybody in just a second. All right, so this is me, Joel Gober. And I do have a research degree. I did research for a number of years in a hospital setting. I developed MRI equipment. Anybody ever hear of magnetic resonance imaging, MRI? Yeah, it's really cool, and it's really nice for this class because with MRIs, we can dig around inside somebody without cutting them open. It's what we call a non-invasive technique. And so if someone wants to look at your insides, guess what? I would choose MRI compared to some exploratory surgery or something like that, right? Because it's really easy. Right after the MRI exam is done, you can get up and play tennis if you wanted to. Not so if you had surgery, for instance. Okay. And I've been teaching at a junior college level for many years. So hopefully I can be a real good resource for you. Because I know a lot of you guys are real serious students and you want to have a good background in anatomy because you want to progress into some kind of clinical setting or clinical livelihood. So this class will certainly help you out. All right, here is my telephone number right here. Here's my office, 265. It's like the number of days in a year, except it's on, what, the second floor instead of the third floor. So it's not exactly equal, but it's close. I have a website where you can download some information, namely the lectures are put on this website right here. I don't have a lot of information, but the lectures will be put there. Here is the textbook that you're required to buy. If you have an earlier edition, that might be okay, but for instance, when it comes time for an exam, I'll say you have to memorize a certain exam figure. And the exam figure numbers from one edition to the next are changed around. So you might not know exactly what exam figure is unless you have this particular edition of the textbook. But if you're going to use an older edition, this textbook is in the reserve section of the library. I put a couple copies in there. So you can go and check out that book for 2 hours at a time and find out exactly what exam figures. And actually, there are questions at the end of the chapter, too, that I will assign. And I might lift questions at the back of the chapter and put it on a test. So if you review those questions, not only do you learn the information, but you kind of know what's going to be on the test or what the flavor of the questions of the test are going to be. All right, here's some of my office hours. During maybe one of these times, I'll be in lab because I like to hold open labs, so you can come see me if you want to work with specimens in lab or models, or if you have a question regarding lecture. You don't just have to do lab work during that time when I'm up there. And I'll have to let you know when I will have open labs. And Dr. Sanchez, who also teaches anatomy, will probably have open lab sometime during the week, and I'll let you know when that will happen. Or maybe one of your lab instructors as well. So I'll try to keep you informed. Okay. Make sure you have an email address in WebStar, because I send out emails to people, helpful notices. And also, you'll want to log into Gateway and also Blackboard. That's the virtual classroom. So these are some important links for you. All right. I don't think I'm going to go over all of this stuff, but you should certainly read all this stuff. One thing that I ask you here, this is important, email etiquette. I don't know really how many students I have this semester, but it might be like 400 or 500. I'm not really sure. So when you send me an email, it's going to help me immensely to let me know who you are, what course you're in, and also the CRN number, because I think I have 6 sections of human anatomy. And if you just tell me your name in this class, it still could take me a half hour to find you in the list of all those students, right? So in the subject line, let me know your name, the course number, and the CRN number, and then I'll be able to help you out right away. And as a matter of fact, I have some spam filters, and if you don't put that information in the subject line at the beginning of the email, you know, that's in the header information, the spam filter just might kick you out, and I won't even get your email, right? So put your last name, course number, and the CRN number of the class. And that's also going to be important, because if you ask me later on in 2 years from now for a recommendation to get into a professional program or graduate school or something, I would like to know that information too. Not just your name, but the class and then what year you took it and the CRN number, right? Okay. Attendance, basically you got to come to class, right? So all of this just says you got to be in class. Here's just a link to the official policy. Okay, what about grading? That's important to know something about grading. You're going to have lab quizzes, you're going to have lab practicums, and then you're going to have objective exams and lecture. That's how your whole grade is going to be determined. All right, so you won't get quizzes in here, but you'll get quizzes in lab, and every lab instructor has some flexibility to give different kinds of quizzes. And I've been trying to talk my lab instructors to giving you 2 quizzes every day, one at the beginning from the previous work and then one at the end of class, a nice easy quiz to help you get points covering material that you learned that day. All right, so one thing that I would envision, this week you're going to learn something about a microscope, so a good quiz at the end of this first lab would be draw and label a microscope. What does a microscope look like to you? What are the pieces? You know, you got the base and the objective lens. So that's pretty easy as long as you apply yourself in lab, and that I think actually makes it more fun because you work with the material, right? Okay, so there's quizzes for 100 points. Every lab practicum is going to be worth 50 points, and you got 5 of those. And objective exams, you're going to have 5 objective exams, and every objective exam is going to be worth 210 points. So if you get 100% on that particular objective test, you get how many points? 210. And the reason I have it scaled like this, it's kind of screwy, but the reason why a lecture exam is 210 points is because the lecture should be worth 75% of your grade and the lab 25%. because this is a four-hour course. 3 hours for lecture and 1 hour for lab. So that's to make the lab correct. All right, so this is how I'll calculate grades. Okay. Academic honesty is very important in lab as well as lecture. Okay, we don't want anybody in a clinical setting altering records, right? Or saying something false about a patient. I mean, it would be terrible. That's how people get killed in hospitals and things like that, right? So you've got to be honest in all of your efforts here. All right, so read all of this information. I don't want to go over all of this. Okay, you can even read this recommendation policy. If you come to me for a recommendation later, help me to write a good recommendation for you. All right? Okay. And then we have the schedule right here. So today we're going to do orientation and cover the first chapter in the textbook. And then next time we're going to talk about cells. And then a week from today, guess what? It's a holiday. So don't come to class because the building will be locked. Okay. And then we're going to finish up cells on the 26th of January. And so far, I haven't found any mistakes in this schedule, but there probably are some. So therefore, we say this is tentative. So you got to come to class to find out how we modify the schedule. But usually we stay pretty close to the schedule here. Yeah.
Is the text reading number the corresponding chapter?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Maybe I'll include some page numbers on some of these chapters, like nervous system. I don't want you to read the whole chapter. But the first chapter is good, pretty much, to read the whole thing. All right. And then after that, here is the lab schedule. There is a mistake on this one because when I look at this one, I see you guys get gypped out of a spring break according to this schedule. All right, so, but I think the lab manual that you get in lab has the correct schedule on it. All right, so I'll get a copy of the correct one and put it on Blackboard for you.
Is your lab manual on the internet? Or the
yeah, it's provided for you in lab, but I also put it as a PDF file, okay, in Blackboard. You don't have to buy one, right? So lab, this lab is pretty nice. You don't really have to buy anything. All the specimens will be provided, dissection tools will be provided. The dissection tools are kind of old and rusted. So if you have a good scalpel, when it comes time for a dissection, you might wish to bring your own particular scalpel in. And of course, I think we don't always provide eye protection and hand protection. So when you do dissections, you should bring in some good glasses or goggles, maybe not the chemistry goggles, but something to protect your eyes. Sunglasses don't work because then you can't see what you're cutting. And you don't want to cut your finger, right? So sunglasses aren't good. And then gloves are important to protect your fingertips. Okay. Okay. So that's pretty much it for the syllabus. Okay. Here is something else I asked everybody to download and print out. And this is, the title of this is Success is Not an Accident. Right? Passing this class just won't happen by accident. So you need to be proactive and come up with a plan. All right? So here's another interesting little saying right here. A failure to plan is really a plan in itself. If you don't plan, that's a plan. What's it a plan for? Failure. Right? So you need a plan to succeed in here. And the sooner you get started with that, the more fun the class is going to be. So what I present right here for you are a couple schedules. One is kind of filled in with some tentative information in it, which I want you to sit down this week and figure out, when can I study to get a good grade in anatomy? Can I study on Tuesdays? Oh, I can't because I can't get a babysitter. I got to work, all right, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So you can't put any hours in. So how many hours do you have to study in this class a week? From what? Yeah, 18 hours. That's the feedback that I get from students that have successfully passed the class. All right, so you got to figure out, how can I get 18 hours per week outside of class? All right, so that's a lot of time. And so write down here where it is predicted where you might have time to study. And then during the course of this next week, on the second table down here, actually fill in when you're studying. And then compare the two and see if it's matching. I mean, maybe you forget that, oh, well, I can't study on Saturdays because something comes up, okay, that you forgot about. Well, that means you have to what? adjust your schedule somehow later the next week. All right, but if you're just going to study 3 or 5 or maybe even 10 hours a week, I don't know if that's enough to get through this class. Okay, so I want to be upfront with everybody how much time is required. If you're going to study 18 hours a week and then all of a sudden you get A's on the first 3 tests, all right, well, that's great. Maybe you can cut back on your studying, all right, at that point in time. But at least start thinking about how you want to work your schedule. And I want you to show either me during office hours or your lab instructor how you're doing it with this schedule. And give us feedback so that next semester, okay, I can inform students how to approach the class from the very beginning so they can get a good grade. All right? Okay, so this is the second thing. So I call this the weekly study plan. The weekly study plan. So we'll just take this class a week at a time. Okay. Okay, so who's got some questions? Anybody have any questions so far? Okay. Oh, you have your syllabus right there. Nice.
For instance, for the orientation is today.
Okay.
So we're supposed to read chapter 1 tonight.
Yeah.
So for next week's cell, should we have chapter 2 read before we come to class, or should that be our reading
for the evening? Okay. That's a great question. Let me go to Blackboard, okay, and answer that question for you.
Okay.
Because I got a little study technique to help you with that.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. How to get the right format. I have a Mac, and my format is not like yours on all of these.
Okay. Maybe I'll have to put it as a PDF file so that people would... Raise your hand if you have Macintoshes. Yeah. Raise your hand if you have Macintoshes. Okay, I'll try to get PDF files. Okay, because if it's a PDF file, if you have a Macintosh, PDF files will give you how I see it. Yeah, these files right here are Microsoft Word files, which sometimes Macintoshes have a problem. They reformat it. Yeah. Okay, that's good. The web browser that you should probably use is Internet Explorer. Okay. And Macintosh has other browsers, and I think Blackboard works okay with those. Okay. Yeah, but I'm not so sure. Some of these other browsers like Firefox and things like that, I don't know if they will support everything that Blackboard does.
They do? Yeah.
Okay. So things are slowly changing, get a little bit more sophisticated. That's really nice. A lot of computer problems eventually go away. You might have to give it 10 years, but eventually they'll go away. Okay. Okay, so let me show you something about Blackboard. Okay, so I'm going to log out right here. All right, so in the syllabus, you have the URL or the website, all right, for Blackboard, and you can see it on the screen right here. It's just what? CypressCollege.blackboard.com, no www before it. So you can click on that. Here's your login page. And to log in, all right, if you're officially registered, this usually works pretty well, sometimes at the beginning of the semester. What is your username? Anybody read that email?
Student ID.
Your student ID number, beginning with the at sign, right? So then you got to get your number, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. I guess there's 8 numbers, right, plus the at sign for your student ID. And then your password is the password that you use in WebStar. That usually gets put into Blackboard, but not always. So if you have problems logging in, let me know. I'll change your password for you. Or after class, you can change it yourself. All right, so let's see. Where am I? There. Here's my password. What was my password? Dot, 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 dot. Okay, let's see what happens. Okay. All right, so we're going to Blackboard, and on the right-hand side, you're going to see a list of classes that your instructors have started Blackboard sites for you. Okay. Now, you're not going to be taking as many classes as I have. So let's see. Anatomy, 2295. Oh, that's for the semester. Great. All right, so just click on your class. So here's the class coming up. On the right-hand side will be a menu on, left-hand side, there's going to be a menu here. The right-hand side will be information for you to access. So here's that first email that I sent everybody. And this is in the announcements page. The course information page, right here, contains the syllabus and the weekly study plan. So for every week, you can download a new weekly study plan, fill it in. Okay, and I actually, I'm recommending that you do that. Okay, now to get this information, you can keep it on your computer in the right-hand frame, or you can download it to your computer. So for IBM-type PCs, not Macintoshes, but people with Macintoshes can figure out how to do that. On a regular mouse, there are two buttons. There's a right-handed and left-handed mouse button. If you go to this link right here and click, not the usual button, but the right-hand button on the right-hand side, you get a list of things you want to do. And what I want to do is save target as. That will download the file to your computer, so it will reside on your computer. You don't have to log into Blackboard and have internet access every time you want that file. It will be on your computer, right? So if you click on that, then it's going to ask you where do you want to put it, and you can see I already have a copy of it, so I don't need to download it again. Okay. Same thing for weekly study plan. Right click. It will say save target as, download it to your computer, then you have it. You don't have to go back to the website. All right, so don't forget, you got a left-hand mouse button. That's the one you usually click. But for other functions, use the right-hand mouse button. You guys probably know more of this than I do. But anyway, I thought I'd show you. Okay, and then all of those links are active. Even though it's a Microsoft Word document, all those links are active once you download it to your computer. Right, so just control and click on it, and it will take you to the schedule of classes or wherever you want to go. Okay, course information, course documents. Okay, we have lecture slides. So here are all the text slides that I'm going to show you during the semester, and go ahead and start downloading the first couple of them. And again, right click, save target as, download it to your computer. And if you can work on your laptop in lecture, you don't even have to make a paper copy of it, right? If you want to make notes in lecture, as long as your keyboard isn't really loud and obnoxious, isn't going to disturb anybody, you can keep notes just in your computer, not even print it out. All right, so here are all the chapters that we're going to look at this semester. All right, what else do we have? Lecture exam study guides. So basically what you're interested in is the exam number one. I tell you what materials you should study, what end of chapter questions are important, and what exam figures are important. And in this one right here, I even include the exam figures for you, which are copies of what's in your text, but the labels are erased. So then you just practice labeling, and if you label each one of those diagrams 10 times, then you know you're going to either have fun on the test or really be bored because it's really old hat. Right, so you can practice to your heart's content to get 100% on the test. This file below it is the study guide without the exam figures. You can see there's a huge difference in size. The one with the figures is over 4 megabytes. The one without the figures is only, 26 kilobytes. So that gives you a feeling for how long it might take to download some of these things. Okay. All right, what else in here? Sometimes I have video tutorials that you can watch. Here's one on the microscope you can look at. And here is the lab manual. Somebody asked me, can you download the lab manual? Yeah, here it is for you. You'll get a copy in lab, but if you need a backup copy, that's fine. Right here. The last thing, and somebody had a question about this, and it has to do with assignments. All right, how should you approach getting ready for a lecture? Okay, and again, if you're proactive, you're going to have an easier time on the test. Here you can go and find some homework assignments. All right, so I have a number of homework assignments, probably one per chapter. Here's a Microsoft Word document, and these questions here are pretty easy, so that if you spend a little bit of time reading the chapter before I give the lecture and answer these questions, then my lecture is going to be a lot more comprehensive or comprehensible to you because you have heard the terminology a couple times already before I speak about it. So if you do this work before I give a lecture, that will help you in lecture. So you don't really have to buckle down and memorize everything in the chapter before lecture, but if you do a little bit of preparation, that will make life easier. Okay, so there's usually about 10 questions that you can write down. All right, and then afterwards, you don't have to turn these in. I won't grade them, but if you want to go over them with me, that's fine. I'd be happy to do that. But here are the answer keys, but you only see one there right now. Right, so I don't want to just give you the answer keys. I want you to work with the information somehow, because that's what will make it more sense for you, right, if you get the information on your own. So there'll be answer keys as the semester proceeds that will just magically appear right here. All right, so that's Blackboard. So I would say that you should, if you haven't logged on to Blackboard, if you want to check it out with me before you leave today, that's fine. If not, if you need to take off, make sure you go home and log on to Blackboard. And if you cannot log on to Blackboard this week, we got to figure out what the problem is. All right, so this week your goal is to log on to Blackboard and get the material that you need. Okay? Okay, there's also a website that's published by the publisher of the book that you should access, and I have that on the syllabus too, because there's study questions and other things to help you prepare for tests on the publisher's website. So I know there's a lot of websites, but you know, you're going to be mousing around having fun in no time on all these websites. All right, so any questions on Blackboard? Yes. You know, I have a discussion board, but I don't have any of that set up to use in this class. If you would like to start a discussion board, then I would be happy to do that. You know, we can start a discussion with something. Because that's a really interesting avenue to learn something. But just so far what I've showed you is what I want you to use Blackboard for. But I will also put grades up there so you can track your grades too. Okay. And the discussion board is kind of interesting, and I think this is really important in a class like this. A lot of times, sometimes there will be a student that likes to study by themselves and read the textbook. All right, I'm not that kind of learner, but I'm sure we have some people in here that are like that. All right, I learn by drawing, I learn by talking, I learn by listening. I don't learn very well by just reading. Okay, and so what I find real important, especially in lab, is not to isolate yourself in lab unless you're that kind of learner, right? If you need quiet time to study by yourself, that is great. But a lot of times in lab, get to know some people and interact with them with the material, and maybe even get to know them outside of class and study, right? And a lot of times students will learn more from other students than from an instructor. So in lab is your chance to get to meet some students and maybe form a little study community to help you learn this information. Okay, so it all depends on how you study. The important thing is if you get together, I know how you guys were when you first came in the room. It was hard for me to settle you guys down and for me to start talking. Right, if you get together as a study group, don't just horse around. Right, apply yourself. Right, make sure you get down to business and study. Okay. But I think that's real important to find study partners. That was the take-home message there. Find study partners. Oh, the other thing about interacting with people in classes, don't hang around with gloomy people, right? Don't hang around with people that say, oh, this class is so hard. Oh, this instructor is lousy. Well, it's a hard class. The instructor is lousy. I'll tell you that at the beginning, right? But... But when a student is telling you those things, I'm not sure of their motivation. A lot of times I see students complaining about a class, and they're trying to talk you into doing bad so that they look better. Right? So be careful hanging out with gloomy people. All right? Because I'm not so sure that's going to help you out in this class, or any class, or actually anything in your life. Okay. All right. So... that's Blackboard, syllabus, and that kind of stuff. Now, if you don't have access to a printer, let me know, and I'll try to get materials for you. But this, the syllabus should come in any second, yeah.
So what does a typical test look like? I mean,
There is, okay, for tests, lecture tests, not for lab tests. Okay, so objective exams, multiple choice, many questions on multiple choice, and generally, this is not really 100% true, but sometimes I can break people down into two kinds of accomplishments. Right, there are people that learn graphically, there are visual learners, and then there are people that are good by reading. So the tests are broken down into those two major components. There's a graphical component, and then there's a reading component to it. So multiple choice, matching is true and false. Fill in the blank is going to be worth maybe about 50% of the test, and then the remainder is going to be matching figures, and that's why exam figures are so important. So you'll have a list of answers that you'll have to match to a diagram. All right, so you won't have to come up with the name of a structure in lecture. All right, there should be a list that you can choose the proper labeling of some anatomy. I usually don't have essay. I'll let you know if I do. Okay, so it's mostly matching, true, false, multiple choice, and then labeling diagrams. The diagrams, I tell you the list, plus also give you the blank figures to practice labeling with. Now, in lab, it's a little bit different. The quizzes could take any kind of form, right? They could be a discussion. They could be drawing. Like, maybe your lab instructor this week will say, draw a microscope. Well, you get the base, and you get a lens here and a lens there and a focus knob, that kind of stuff. All right, so you won't see that with a lecture test, but you might in a lab quiz. And you might have fill in the blank for lab quizzes, multiple choice, true, false. Okay, now the practicums are pretty much another format that's all different. And for the practicums, you have to know the names of structures. And these structures will be from real specimens or from models or equipment that we have. And you walk around the room, and you have a blank piece of paper with lines on it. And line number one, you have to find the question for number one and read it. And they might say, name this bone. And then you have to put the name of that bone down. You won't have a list to choose from. You have to know the name in your mind, and you have to know how to spell it correctly. All right, so in order to get 100% credit on a lab practical question, you have to spell it correctly. And students always say, well, why do I have to know spelling in here? All right, so, well, what's the answer for that? What's the easy answer? Why do you have to know spelling? Because this is school. That's the, right? You have to learn spelling in school, so that's important. Okay, so does that, who had that question about tests? Yeah, does that sort of orient you a little bit more? Okay. Yeah. Yeah?
Oh, I from the
study guide. That's right. I should never put a picture from your textbook on a test that's not on the study guide. Okay? And if that ever happens, then I have to figure out what to do with it. Like maybe make it extra credit or something, I'm not sure. So I pay real close attention only to put what's on the study guide on the test. Okay? Okay. Any other questions? Yeah. So, for this class, there was one question about Blackboard. This is not a hybrid class. This is not an online class. So, you're not expected to have internet access or a computer or any of that kind of stuff. So, if those resources are limiting for you, you have to let me know and I'll try to provide information. But we have so many computers on campus that that really shouldn't be that big of a problem for you. Okay, but if it is, let me know. One of the problems was the PDF file. Try and get PDF files up there for everybody. Okay. All right, so I'm going to close some of these files down now. So when you're mousing around on Blackboard, what do you have to become familiar with? What kind of clicking? Right-clicking. Save target as. Yeah. Okay. All right, so here are the, this is the first lecture that you can download. All right, so this is Introduction to the Human Body. Let me just see where we are. We started at 10:30, so we got about 40 minutes left in class, something like that. Okay. Okay, well, we got a couple terms. Let's learn some terminology. All right, so again, don't forget, no prerequisites for this class. We're starting, all right, all at the same level. We have two terms here, anatomy, and the other term is physiology. These are both scientific disciplines, and they're related to each other. It's impossible, really, to know one without knowing something about the other, and vice versa. But in your mind, you should make a distinction between them. Anatomy is a scientific discipline that investigates the structure of the body, or the structure of molecules, or the structure of something. Okay? For instance, in a normal human body, if you got a hand on one side, what can you tell me about the other side?
Okay.
Yeah, you got another hand on the other side. We call that bilateral symmetry. Okay? We don't always have bilateral symmetry in the body, but usually we do. Like, for instance, give me an organ you only have one of.
Heart.
Your heart, yeah. You don't have a bilateral symmetry in the heart necessarily, because you only have one of them. Okay, the other term is physiology. Physiology is the scientific discipline that deals with the processes or the functions of living things. And so somebody mentioned heart. What's the function of the heart? What is it supposed to do? What does your heart do? It pumps blood. That's right. So you can know a lot about how the heart is pumping blood and why it's pumping blood. But in order to really understand what's going on, you really have to know something about the structure of the heart as well. Right? So there's always a relationship between the structure and the function of something. Now, why is it that our hand is such a nifty device? Because we can take notes. We can use a fork to eat and things like that and make all kinds of obnoxious gestures to each other on the freeway. Okay? But why? So we have a ability to communicate, community to take notes and eat and things like that. What? So those are all functions of the hand. What can you tell me about the structure of the hand that allows you to do that? Can anybody, any organism do that? What about your cat or dog? No. Because we have a specialized structure with our hand, and that is what? This thumb right here. Not only can we adduct it, we're going to find out what that means in just a second, not only can we move all of our fingers together, we can also undergo a motion that we call opposition, right? We can move our thumb anteriorly and we can pinch things because we have an opposable thumb. So organisms that have an opposable thumb have more dexterity with their hand. We can manipulate instruments, right? That allows for communication, eating, languages, and things of that nature. Right? So there is always a relationship between the structure of something and the function of something, or the anatomy of something and the physiology of something. So in this class, we're going to focus on which one of these two? Anatomy. But we're also going to learn a little bit about physiology as well, because that's why we're studying anatomy, so that we understand how our bodies function. Okay. And if there is abnormal anatomy, what do you think might happen? You might have abnormal physiology, right? Right. So that's why we want to know what the normal anatomy is. All right. So what are some branches of anatomy? Here are different disciplines, right? The first one is gross anatomy, and what gross means is just big, not disgusting. Okay. So gross anatomy is the kind of anatomy we can see with our naked eye. We don't need special instruments. We don't need a microscope or some special kind of visualizer to see anatomy. Gross anatomy just means big. Like what? Give me an example of gross anatomy. Lungs, nose, ear, eye, right? Fingers, that's all gross anatomy. As opposed to microscopic anatomy. That is what you're doing for the first couple lab periods. It's actually pretty cool anatomy, because you don't ever notice that unless you use what? A microscope, and then there's a whole new world. It's like traveling to another country, a whole different culture, right? A whole different aspect to the human body when you use a microscope. So microscopic anatomy can see things that are too small to see with your naked eye, including cells and maybe even some chemicals. developmental anatomy is how is the study of anatomy, how our bodies change from conception until when we pass on. So our body is continuously changing all the time. It's a very dynamic place. So we're not the same organism today that we were yesterday or even seconds ago. Our body is changing. But just kind of fun detail, what part of your body keeps growing, never stops growing? Your nose and your ears. That's right. They keep growing and growing and growing. That's why your grandpas have really big noses and big ears. Okay. So if we're lucky enough to live long enough, our ears and noses are going to get bigger too. Okay, embryology. We're not going to spend a lot of time with developmental or embryology. Embryology is the study from conception to birth. So it's a little bit different period of time than development. All right, surface anatomy is fun because surface anatomy just allows us to appreciate structures that are deep inside our body from external features. All right, like you ever hit your elbow and you get that little electric shock? And that point on your elbow, I don't know, does anybody know what bone that is or what the part of that bone is? Okay, yeah. So surface anatomy, you're all right, that's the ulna, and it's called the olecranon process. So surface anatomy just allows you to relate to different easy points to see on your body and relate them to deeper structures. All right, so you'll be able to do that. We don't spend a lot of time, but you'll just learn by osmosis almost, surface anatomy. Systemic anatomy is a way to study anatomy, and this is the approach we take in this class. So we can break the body down into various organ systems. And so this is a really nice approach because if you just look at a human body, it's very complicated. But if you have something that's really complicated, how do you begin to study something that's very complicated? It might be your finances at home. If you want to understand your finances, what do you have to do with your finances? Break it down into smaller pieces, right? And so that's what we do in anatomy. We break a very complicated organism down, like the human body, into their organ systems, like the respiratory system, the muscle system, the skeletal system, the nervous system. So we just study little pieces at a time, and then once we study all the pieces, we can add those parts back together again to get a good understanding of how the body functions, right? And the same thing for your finances, too. If you want to understand what's going on, you should know how much money is going to food, entertainment, insurance for your car, right? How much you pay for housing, all that kind of stuff, to know if you're going to run out of money at the end of the month or not, right? And then once you have all that broken down, you have a really good idea of what your finances are. All right, so systemic anatomy is an important approach in this class. So we're going to study anatomy by these different subsystems. Cytology is the study of cells. Okay, there are people that just see what the structure of cells are made, how they're made. And the next study right here is histology. And histology, again, is cytology gross anatomy or microscopic anatomy? Microscopic anatomy. So again, some of these different topics interrelate to each other. Histology is another form of microscopic anatomy. You need a microscope, and you're not so much interested in just one cell, you're interested in a tissue. So how do thousands of cells come together to perform a certain kind of function? That's histology. So we're going to learn different tissues in the body. And what's really nice about that, if you were to point to some place in your body, I could tell you what tissue it is, and there's only four kinds of tissues that make up your whole body. All right? There's some subclasses there that you'll have to be aware of, but there's only four general kinds of tissues. Okay. All right, so another way to approach this class is to know this structural and functional organization of the body. So again, when we have something complicated, we like to break it down into its building blocks. So an important concept in this class is the concept of building block. And maybe somebody in here could tell me what is the building block of a protein? A protein is a molecule in our body. It's made from smaller molecules. And we kind of learn this by reading the newspaper and stuff like that, I think. But I just want to illustrate the importance of understanding building blocks. What's a building block of a protein called? It's called amino acid, right? You don't have to know much about amino acids, but I just want you to become familiar with building blocks. Okay, so what are some of the building blocks that make up the human body? All right, the first one. And we're going to start with the smallest pieces and then move up to some bigger pieces. The smallest pieces are chemicals. And in this class, we don't spend a lot of time with chemicals, but they are submicroscopic. Those are the building blocks for other things that make up your body. And for instance, if you're going to take a physiology class, we actually talk a lot about molecules and a lot about chemistry in a physiology class, but not so much in anatomy because we can't see it with a microscope. They're too small. We'll talk about it just a little bit. All right, so these are the building blocks for everything in your body. And if we put a bunch of molecules together or chemicals together, we get something called an organelle. Organelles are things that give function to the cells that make up your body. And I gave you a couple examples here, like the nucleus. Does anybody know what the nucleus is good for? Or what happens inside the nucleus? That's where your genetic material is stored, your chromosomes inside the nucleus, for instance. All right, so it's much, much smaller than a cell, but it performs that function inside the cell. And we got two lectures to cover this material coming up this week and next week. All right, and so what's the building block of an organelle? Or what makes an organelle? It's going to be chemicals, for instance, like proteins or fatty acids. And the nucleus, of course, has DNA in it. All right. And if we put a bunch of organelles together and use organelles as a building block, what can we make? We can make a cell. Right? So that this you should be able to now begin to see the hierarchical structure of how we put the class together or how you build an understanding of what's happening inside the human body. All right, so the cell is fascinating because this is the basic living unit of all life. Right? Nothing can be alive unless it's cellular in nature. Right? It's got to be a cell in order for it to be alive. And what does a cell have to have? It has to have genetic material. It's got to have things like DNA in it. And it also has to have cytoplasm or organelles. Here are some examples of organelles that we're going to be familiar with. The endoplasmic reticulum, Golgi body, right? That's all cytoplasm. So it's got to have genetic material and cytoplasm. So that leads us to an interesting consideration, and that is a virus. Is a virus alive or is it non-living? Okay, some people might say, oh, well, it's kind of alive, but you know what? If you look closely at a virus, it contains genetic information, genetic material, but it has no cytoplasm. So if it doesn't have cytoplasm, what do you got to say about that virus? It's not alive. All right? So is it easier to treat bacterial infections or viral infections? Bacterial infections. And the reason is well, a number of different reasons, but one reason is that bacteria are alive, and if something's alive, what can you do to it? You can kill it. But a virus, it's not alive. If it's not alive, can you kill it? Can't kill it. It's an interesting clinical dilemma, right? How do we prevent the function of something, right, if it's not even alive? So viral infections are difficult to treat. Okay. Something else. We can put a bunch of cells together, use them as a building block for something. And if we put a bunch of cells together, we get a tissue. And a tissue is going to have, or one tissue will have, a unifying function. Right, like muscle is a particular tissue. What's the function of muscle? You probably could tell me. Movement. And in particular, in my thinking, what muscle does is that it contracts. It shortens. Right? And as a result of that, it provides for movement. Right? So each of these tissues has a particular function. Right? And all of these different tissues have similar cells that make them up. Right, but these different tissues have different cells that make them up. That's why we want to know something about cells, because we want to come up with different kinds of tissues. All right, and then a tissue can be used as a building block for an organ. Let's see, what's a good organ? What's your favorite organ? Lung. Somebody said lung? Lung? Did somebody say lung? Okay, say it one more time. Liver. Okay. Liver is an organ because it contains more than one of these kinds of tissues right here. So an organ has the other building blocks. All right, so the liver has epithelium. It has connective tissue because blood is connective tissue. The liver doesn't have muscle, right? But there are nerves in the liver as well. So when we bring different tissues together to form a structure that performs a certain kind of function, we call that an organ. Okay. And then we can take various organs and put them together to form an organ system. Right? So organs become building blocks for the next higher level of organization, organ system. It's a group of organs performing one function. So for instance, your heart is an organ and your blood vessels are an organ. Right? And if we put blood vessels and heart together, we get the circulatory system or the cardiovascular system. That's an organ system. All right, so and then if we put all the organ systems together, what do we get? We get the organism. We get your whole body. All right, so we can't start really studying down over here because it's way too complicated. Where are we going to start? With the really small stuff and start building these things together before you can get a good appreciation of the whole organism. And always looking at these slides before class. So here is a nice picture that shows the hierarchical levels of organization. All right, starting with chemicals, or even smaller than what we're going to start with in here. Right, atoms can be used to make molecules. Molecules can be used to make organelles. Organelles can be used to make cells, and then tissues, organs, organ systems, and then we put all the organ systems together, we get the whole organism. So you should be able to go back and forth on this picture right here. For instance, I might say, what's the building block of an organism? What would you say? You would say organ system. Okay? Or I could say, what's the building block of a tissue? You would say a cell. All right? Okay. So try to organize in your mind going backwards and forwards with these different levels of organization. So that kind of leads us to the next question. Well, what are the organ systems that make up the human body? And your book has a number of really nice pictures that show this. It can be broken down in different ways. So let's go over some of these. The first one, and usually I test you on this one. I put this one on the test because you probably have never heard of this term. It's called the integument or the integumentary system. And if you look at that slide, what the heck is the integumentary system? That's your skin, and it's pretty amazing. We look at skin all the time. We're very familiar with what skin is. We just don't know, growing up, what clinically what we call it or scientifically what we call it. We call it the integument. Right? So it's very obvious to us. It's also the largest organ in the body. Okay, so integument means the skin and accessory structures like hair and nails, and then there's some glands as well. Skeletal system is what? Just everything that makes up all the bones of your body. That's skeletal system, and also cartilage. Let's see, could you give me an example of a bone in the skeletal system? Vertebrae, yep, that make up the vertebral column. The muscular system. All these things are specialized to contract. Anybody know a name of a muscle? Biceps brachii in your arm right here, right, for flexing your forearm. All right, so you should be able to name these different organ systems and maybe have on the tip of your tongue one particular organ. All right, the nervous system has brain. Has the spinal cord, and it has nerves in the rest of your body. We call those peripheral nerves that makes up the nervous system. Endocrine system has things like an ovary or a testes, okay, or adrenal gland or a thyroid gland. All of these glands secrete something into the blood. Namely, can anybody tell me what an endocrine gland secretes into the blood? Hormone in particular is the correct terminology for that. All right, so this is the endocrine system. Cardiovascular system, you've got the heart and blood vessels. We've got a couple major kinds of blood vessels that take blood away from the heart. We call those arteries. Other blood vessels bring blood back to the heart. We call those veins. And then we got another kind of special blood vessel in between an artery and a vein. Anybody know what that's called? That's called a capillary. Yeah, we're going to become familiar with all those things, right? All right, what are some other organ systems? Lymphatic system. That's a little ancillary system that works with your cardiovascular system. If it's not working properly, you're going to swell up. We call that edema. But the lymphatic system also helps fight infection. So it's also an important part of your immune system. The spleen and the thymus are important. Lymphatic organs. Respiratory system. We got a nice chapter on the respiratory system. It includes the airways that bring air to the lungs and the lungs and maybe some muscles that help us breathe. All part of the respiratory system. Digestive system. Important one. Give me a name of digestive system organ. Yeah, like the stomach. Large intestine, small intestine. Urinary system. Okay, provides a number of different functions in your body, but it's important probably, you all know, for excretion of toxic compounds. And that starts with the kidney right here. And then that produces urine, which is stored in the urinary bladder to be voided at some appropriate time, later time. All right, and reproductive system. All right, we got male and female. Are two sexes enough for whatever the reproductive system does? Oh, well, that leads me to the first question. What is the function of the reproductive system? Who can tell me? To reproduce. I heard to reproduce. Well, you know what? That's not really true. So we're going to talk about the reproductive system right at the end of class. All right, so we'll really find out what the true purpose of the reproductive system is, all right, at the end of class. Because it's really complicated. Look at all these different structures, depending on whether you're male or female. Okay. All right. So these are the organ systems. What's next? Some terminology and body plan. Anatomical position. All right, this is important. It's a pretty simple concept, but this is a place where you have to start understanding anatomy because we like to describe how you get to from one point in your body to another point in your body. And in order to describe how to get from one place to another to somebody, we have to all assume that the body is in the identical position. So the roadmap doesn't change, right? If you change the roadmap and you tell somebody how to get from one place to another and they have a different roadmap, then they're going to get lost. All right, so anatomical position is real important. Anatomical position for the human body means that somebody is standing on their feet with their head erect, facing at you like that, with their arms down by their sides. But if you're just relaxed, which way are my thumbs pointing? Inward, right in toward my body. Well, that's not anatomical position. That's a comfortable position, but anatomical position, you have to rotate your thumbs so they are pointing to the outside, like that. So this is anatomical position, with the thumbs pointing to the outside. And that's about the last time I'll say pointing to the outside, because there's a special anatomical word we use to describe how the thumbs are pointing. Yeah, we call that lateral. If they're pointing to the outside of your body, that's lateral. If they're pointing toward the inside, we say pointing medially. So medial and lateral, we'll learn today as well. All right, so this is anatomical position, just like this. Okay, then, once we know anatomical position, we know some directional terms. What's the first directional term that we have right here? Anterior and posterior. So the anterior part is the front part in anatomical position. That's the part that you're looking at. It also has another name. We call that ventral. Anterior and ventral in the human are exactly the same. Then, so we use that terminology interchangeably, and you'll have to use it interchangeably too. So you'll have to look at that a number of times. Or when I'm giving lectures, sometimes I have to stop and think, okay, because it's confusing. But you just have to use it and understand that terminology. Posterior is the back or more toward the back. That's the same as dorsal. Okay. So different structures will be given designations as anterior, or they could be ventral, either one or the other. Or you could be talking to somebody and use those terms interchangeably. And I suppose that's a little confusing, but once you get used to it, it's not too bad. But have you ever visited, say, a country maybe in Europe? And this is kind of fun. On the news report, because the countries are really, really small and they all talk different languages, a news reporter might ask somebody a question in German, and whoever they're interviewing might answer in French. And they'll have a conversation with two different languages. Okay? That doesn't happen much here in the United States. Maybe a couple times you might do that. But so here is what? This first line right here, you just got to be familiar with both of those terms. Anterior ventral, posterior dorsal. Okay? Superior and inferior. Toward your head means superior. Down toward your feet means inferior. All right? So you have your chin, and you got your belly button. Which one is superior to the other? Your chin is superior. All right, so these terms we always use with a relative reference to each other. All right, you can't just say, well, the nose is superior, because it might not be. Is it superior to your eyebrows? No. So you always use two terms to say if it's any of these possibilities right here. Okay. Okay, cranial and caudal pretty much means the same thing as superior and inferior. Cranial means up toward the head or brain. The cranium is up over here. Caudal is kind of funny because that really means toward your tail. But who could show me their tail? Nobody's got a tail in here. But it means what? Kind of down toward that area of your body. Okay. So it almost means the same as superior and inferior. We talked about medial and lateral. Medial means towards some midline in your body. Right? Lateral means pointing out to the outside. So don't forget, you got to use two anatomical parts to use these terms. So let's talk about the digits. The digits are your fingers. All right? So the thumb, is it medial or lateral to your little finger? The thumb is what to the little finger? The thumb is?
Lateral.
Yeah, either lateral or medial. It's lateral because it's pointing to the outside. Right? And the little finger is medial to the thumb. Okay? All right, so that's how you use that. Proximal and distal. This might be the hardest one to appreciate. Proximal and distal. Think of some center part of your body. Right smack in the center. Okay? And then what have you got attached to that center thing? You've got maybe an appendage, like your upper appendage right here. And you got different parts of this appendage. You have your shoulder, and you've got your elbow, and you got your wrist. Okay? Things that are more closely related to that center location in your body are what we call proximal. Things that are located farther away are what we call distal. So again, let's think of shoulder and elbow right here. The elbow is what compared to the shoulder? The elbow is farther away. We call that distal. The shoulder is proximal compared to the elbow right here. The shoulder is proximal compared to the wrist, right? Because it's closer to some center attachment point in your body. Proximal and distal. I think you go over these things in lab too. Who had lab today? Did you go over these in lab today too? Doesn't hurt to go over it twice probably, in at least the first week. Okay. Superficial and deep. When we think of an organ, like the brain, for instance, there are certain things that we find right on the surface of the brain, and they're different than structures that are inside the brain. All right, so we use different terminology. Things that are right on the surface, we say, are superficial. All right, it doesn't mean that they're not any more important or anything like that. They're just on the surface. Things that are inside the brain are what we call deep. Right, so if you want to describe on how to really get at something that's located inside something, you have to say what? Well, we need to go deep to find that particular structure. So the brain has a superficial part and then a deep part to it as well. And all the parts of your body. So for instance, if we think of organ systems, the integument compared to the cardiovascular system, how would you describe the integument in this terminology right here compared to the cardiovascular system? It is superficial, that's right. Cardiovascular system is deep to the integument. All right, so that's how you would use that term. contralateral and ipsilateral. Sometimes things start on one side of your body and they cross over. All right? And sometimes something starts on one side of your body and it stays on that same side of the body. All right? So if it is contralateral, it means that it crosses over. If it's ipsilateral, it stays on the same side. That's how we use that terminology. Contralateral, opposite side, ipsilateral, stays on the same side. For instance, the right side of your brain usually controls what side of your body?
Left.
It's on the opposite side, so signals cross over, right? That's contralateral, contralateral, okay? Okay, so that's some terminology here. So what kind of diagram do you have in your book that shows this? Oh, I don't have a picture of it? Don't have a picture. Okay, but those are good, important terms for you to know about. Okay, body planes. Okay, body planes in our space that we live in can be defined by three directions. Like if I want to define any point in this room, what do I have to tell you? Like if somebody left a purse in the room, what would I have to tell you?
Directions.
Yeah, directions. Like how far back it is from the front of the room, how far it is from the ceiling, and then how far away from the walls. And you could exactly define where that purse is. Right? So there are three planes that define physical space. Okay? So here are the three planes. Sagittal plane, transverse plane, and frontal plane. Sometimes these have more than one name, so frontal or coronal are the same. And these planes will bisect or cut the human body into different regions. So let's take a look and see where these different regions are. Okay. So here are the three planes. This one that's going to separate a superior part of the body from an inferior part of the body, this one right here kind of looks like a tabletop. Can you see that little tabletop right there? That's what we call a transverse plane. Sometimes we call that a cross section. Right, that's a transverse plane. Another plane is the frontal plane. What's another name for frontal?
Coronal.
So a frontal plane is going to separate some anterior part of your body from a posterior part. And the these planes can what? Can shift back and forth. Just like that transverse plane can shift superiorly or inferiorly. It's still a transverse plane. It's just shifting down into different levels of your body. A coronal plane can separate anterior from posterior. Maybe a coronal plane is just going to cut off the very tip of your nose. Right, that's still a coronal plane because it can shift anterior and posterior. That's still a coronal plane. And then the third plane is a sagittal plane. And a sagittal plane is going to separate of the right side, some part of the right side of your body with some parts on the left side of your body. Right, and again, that sagittal plane can shift either right or left. A sagittal plane can separate your right arm from the rest of your body, looking right through your shoulder, for instance. That would be a sagittal plane. The sagittal plane has one special kind of plane because in most circumstances, the body does have this beautiful bilateral symmetry. In a lot of cases, what you have on the right side of your body, you got on the left side. So if you split the body right smack down the middle through the tip of your nose, between your two front teeth, right through the middle of your belly button, on a sagittal plane, we call that a mid-sagittal plane. So that's going to separate the body into equal right and left parts. That's what we call mid-sagittal. Anything that's not mid-sagittal, that's offset one way or the other, is what we call parasagittal, a parasagittal plane. Okay, I don't have an example of parasagittal. This right here is a sagittal plane, but it looks like it's what, right smoot in the middle? So we call that the mid-sagittal plane. Okay. Some body regions. Well, we've got head, that's easy to understand, right? The neck, the anatomy between your shoulders and your head. Okay, your trunk is everything below your neck, but not including your appendages, not your arms and not your legs, or not your upper appendage or lower appendage. So let's take a look at some body regions. All right, so here is head, here's neck. All of this is the trunk. There are no appendages. And then the trunk can be broken down into the thorax. All right, the thorax is defined by your rib cage. And then the abdomen is in this region. And pelvis is down more within your hip bones. And the perineum, right here, all right, the perineum is really the floor of the pelvic cavity. That's something that you don't pick up in everyday life either, where that perineum is. But clinically, it's very important. Because sometimes during childbirth, that perineum rips or it actually has to be surgerized to allow for the birth of that infant. Okay, that's the floor of the pelvic cavity. So if we put the pelvis and the abdomen and the thorax together, we get use these as building blocks. We get the trunk. Okay, and if we put the head, neck, and trunk together, we get something called the axial skeleton. The axial skeleton is most of the human body, but it does not contain the upper appendage or lower appendage. Okay, so axial skeleton includes the head, the neck, okay, and the thorax and abdomen. Okay, so two lower appendages, two upper appendages right here. Okay, something else that's not on this diagram can be confusing sometimes. Let's talk about the next time because it's time to go. All right, so try to start working on that homework a little bit. Maybe I'll show you some more stuff on Blackboard next time. But don't forget, don't miss the first class period. And don't forget, who's got that sign-in sheet? Bring that sign-in sheet down here, please.
Hi, Dr. Gates.
Hey there.
Johnson, by the way.
Floresco.
That's right.
Let me turn this off.